All right, welcome to the Nation's Blind Podcast. This is Anil Lewis, and I know you guys just can't wait to hear from Melissa, but you're going to have to wait a little longer because today, joining me in emceeing this wonderful show is the original voice of the Nation's Blind Podcast, Mr. Chris Danielson.
Hey, Anil, great to be here with you. The second string, but...
Well, good thing we have a very deep bench.
So exactly. Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. So great to be here with you. And we have an interview today that I really think is going to cause a paradigm shift in the thinking of a lot of our listeners.
I'd be curious. What do you guys think when you hear the term deaf-blind? I mean, we as the National Federation of the Blind hopefully have educated you that blindness and sight is not necessary for success, and blindness can be reduced to a mere nuisance. It's just one of those characteristics. But what if we tell you about being deaf-blind? What does that take your mind? Hopefully this interview will reshape whatever you're thinking.
Exactly.
Because we have two dynamic individuals today that represent our deaf-blind division.
That's right. We have both the president and the first vice president of our deaf-blind division. And these are both women that you're going to want to get to know. They are mothers. They are engaged in their communities. They have hobbies. They are living the lives they want. But as people who are deaf-blind, not just blind, but it's...
very nice. I see what you did there. That's a nice little coin of a phrase.
Right. I appreciate that.
And you better watch out. He's competing for your spot.
Oh, no. I would never try to compete with Melissa. But
no, because you'd have to take the mic out of her dead cold hands. That's one of my favorite episodes. Yeah.
We don't want to go there. But this is really informative. And I think without further ado, we can get to it because I just feel like, you know, like we had said we were going to do, we want to talk about the different populations that are within our movement. And so this is an introduction to an important part of our movement.
Yeah, really good interview.
Yeah, I think this will be a really educational experience. It has been for us and it will be for everybody. So let's listen to the interview.
All right. I'm really pleased to have our guest today on the Nation's Blind Podcast. We all know that the National Federation of the Blind knows that blindness is not the characteristic that defines you or your future. These young ladies are going to tell us that deafblindness is also not the characteristic that defines you or your future, and that you can live the lives you want. Deafblindness is not what holds you back. We have Alice Eady and Marsha Drenth with our deafblind division here to join us. Ladies, welcome. Glad you can
participate. Thank you.
I think what would be helpful for our listeners is let's let them get to know you a little bit. So Alice, as the president of the deafblind division, I'll yield to you. Can you tell us your story and how you identify as a deafblind member of the National Federation of the Blind?
Well, myself, I was born deaf, blind, premature, with lots of other disabilities that came with it, so that I wasn't actually diagnosed officially until after about 8 months. And it has progressed so that I have both dual hearing and vision loss, but it has continuously progressed. I'm, in fact, soon to be implanted in my right ear. But what happened in my youth was that I was fortunate that my mother passed away immediately after I was born due to complications of all kinds of things. And so I was raised mostly by my father with a brother. And, you know, he was not American born himself. And he raised us with the understanding that we had to always have our best foot forward and we had to accomplish things whether we liked it or not. I also happened to be the only female in the family, so that meant the female duties of the house fell to me, whether I knew how to do it or not. And he didn't care. He was also military, so that he did everything in that fashion. And, you know, so it didn't matter how long it took to do something. It also, you know, he actually did inspections and all that kind of stuff. So if he went out of town and came back, you were ready for inspection and you knew that quarter better bounce off that bed because he'd wake you up if it didn't, you know. But I also knew that education was the key. And my father insisted that I learn to speak well. And if it took all evening over the course of a meal to for me to ask for something and to make sure that people understood what I wanted. That's the way he did it. We can wait. If it took all night, he didn't care. So I was fortunate that speech was very important for him. He was also multilingual. I'm not, but my children are. And the, as far as being deafblind, the most important thing is having a good work ethic. You know, I am a college graduate. I have a bachelor's in elementary education, developmental disabilities, coordinate major in psychology, sociology, reading theory. I've run reading labs before. I am also a certified office administrator, lots of other things. And so right now, I'm doing under COVID conditions, we're probably, I guess, part-time would be the best way to explain what I do. I'm a mentor in what we call an EDGE program, which was a program developed by CBVI in my state, and it includes employment, development, guidance, and enrichment for youth 14 to 21. And that includes transition skills. It includes cooking, prep for college, prep for employment, all kinds of things like that. So that's the other thing that I do. I'm also a certified advocate through Helen Keller National Center, as well as independently.
And you're an athlete as well. Is that correct?
Yes. Paralympian. Well, I'm certified and I actually have the Paralympic body created a webpage for me. So I'm posted and still up there, and the scores that I created in 2017 are still holding. Nice. I am a senior, so, but I compete in everything, all track and field events. I did try the long jump, but it's not one that I do competitively only for invitational purposes, because the invitational is kind of like, it's almost like a social gathering. Everybody gets to see each other. And we also connect with a lot of the younger kids that participate in the invitational, because it's basically designed around young children, wheelchair racing, and all of those kinds of things. We all get to hang out. Some of the kids that we've seen in the last 4 years, some of them wait for us to show up because we'll share space with them. We have hug sessions. We kind of mentor them without mentoring them, but I'm the only deafblind participant in any of the events that I go to.
Hmm. Thank you. I appreciate that. That was enlightening. I mean, I've known you for a while, but that really shared some things that I hadn't really known about you. So Marsha, I will yield to you to hear your story.
Thank you, Anil. Unlike Alice, I was born visually impaired. I come from a long line of family who has been involved in the Federation since 1952 when the Texas affiliate was formed.
Oh, wow.
I have a condition called aniridia, which also comes with a lot of other eye conditions. For example, glaucoma, cataracts, detached retinas, and so on. Only until 2007 was I visually impaired and lost my vision in 2004. I was the type of blind person that always really appreciated my hearing. I loved music. I loved being able to hear. I would sit and listen to people talk. I loved language. I loved going to concerts. And in 2007, I had an orientation and mobility instructor who began to notice that I got lost in familiar areas. At the time, I was a student in the local community college, and this was unusual for me. And she suggested I go and get a hearing test. I went, and I was told that I had a moderate to mild hearing loss, and I didn't wear hearing aids for a long time. So fast forward, I moved to Baltimore. I then met my husband at the 2009 Youth Slam. I still didn't wear hearing aids. I was in complete denial that I had a hearing loss. I didn't want anything to do with those things you stick in your ears that made sound weird and made my ears sweaty and just changed the way I heard things. As a blind person, you're taught to use your hearing all the time for traffic, cooking, and everything. And that's what I was comfortable with. And then in 2011 and 2012, as a student at Temple University pursuing my social work degree, I began to no longer be able to hear the person sitting next to me or the professor up at the front of the room, even with the most powerful amplification. And so I begrudgingly took out those hearing aids, put them in, but unfortunately they weren't strong enough. And so at that point in my life, I decided to take off a year. I didn't like that fact. I attended the Helen Keller National Center because, again, I grew up in a family that had already lots of blindness skills. I knew how to cook. I knew how to use a cane. I began using a cane at 5 years old. I knew how to read Braille. So I needed skills on how to learn to live as a deaf blind person. Mm-hmm. I went to Helen Keller for 9 months, where I learned to use sign language and learned how I would be a social worker and adapt my life as now a hard of hearing deaf person. I do identify as a deaf blind. My hearing is now considered to be severe to profound. I wear two of the most powerful hearing aids on the market. And there's lots of things that I do to compensate for my hearing. No longer do I use my hearing for travel. That's probably very scary for a lot of people, but I don't, because I have other tools in my toolbox that I use. I'm currently working as an access technology instructor in Philadelphia. I'm very active in the Deafblind Division in my state affiliate here in Pennsylvania. I'm the mom of three adult children. And yeah, that, and I love to crochet shop and do all kinds of things.
So fantastic. And you're the first vice president of the Deafblind Division, is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
And I didn't mean to interrupt you. Was there something else you wanted to say in conclusion?
So I'm also the president of the Pennsylvania Deafblind Affiliate Division. I've been a longtime guide dog user. I'm kind of at the middle and at this time between dogs, but yeah, so I'm very involved and will continue to be involved. I'm an advocate for deafblindness and anything to do with accommodations. You know, again, I can't say it enough, but I was a person who was blind. I'm now deafblind. And, you know, if there's anything that I want folks to hear about, you know, this podcast is that it's okay to be deafblind. It's okay to have a hearing loss. And it's just as respectable to be blind as it is to be deafblind.
And that's a really good segue to the other topic we really like to drill down. I appreciate you guys sharing that you're living the lives you want. And that's really kind of what we do as an organization. And one of the ways we help individuals with specific characteristics is we form our divisions, and we have a deafblind division. Again, Alice is president, and Marcia, you as first vice president. Can you tell our listeners some of the things that, you know, the deafblind division is working on, some of the initiatives? I really applaud the fact that the lives that you guys have lived are exemplary, and I think it's always important in the work that we do for individuals to have kind of those role models that really walk the talk. So how do you use the division in order to inspire and encourage others to still set high expectations for themselves, as you both obviously have?
Alice, you want to go first?
Partly, I do a lot of the email answering, both in my state as well as, you know, generally speaking, because I do spend a lot of time on various boards that I sit on, and I intercede often in my own county, because I sit on the Transportation Advisory Council, their Office of Aging and Area Agencies and several others, so that I give them input as to how to make things accommodated for me in those settings. I'm also involved with the Disability Awareness Council in my city, so that we plan workshops ourselves through that. And when I'm as a division person, lately, I also am involved with, in New Jersey, we have a DB Cannon J, which is a deafblind organization that works with, we're doing how to stay connected and not depressed during COVID, so that I can also be known to, let's see, Today I evaluated mask designs that were going to be used for something. I've evaluated getting ready for playing bingo, whether it's songs. We did a happy hour. So that these are some things that I will be able to extend into the division sometime when we plan convention. There will be other things that I know how to do now that I didn't then. But the biggest part of what we do in the division is, A, to educate each other and to bring other people, gather, create committees to assist us in, for instance, we have a mentor program. And Marcia can tell you more on that because she coordinates that. We have had a SSP program that was developed, and we did try creating SS services for us through convention a couple of years back. And so there's a lot of learning in that way, but mostly no matter what venue you find yourself, it's always, you have to be on point because it's our job to teach other people that A, you know, as odd as we are, we're not nearly as odd as you think. And that sometimes it's just a matter of creativity. And if you ask me or you ask us what most of us do know what we actually need. And in my case, I'm always a work in progress because every time I turn around, my hearing has changed, which is why I'm going for another cochlear implant. But being adaptable, that's the most important thing that the division can do. And we've been working hard to try and recreate ourselves so that we do every convention have workshops, but we would also hope to at some point develop things that we would be doing on Zoom like other groups do, so that we would actually do some training or other outside activities that can be done.
Nice. And by the way,
I'll defer to Marcia because I want her to discuss how we do the mentoring and that part of it.
Cool. I don't think you're odd at all. I just put that out there. I think you're pretty impressive. So Marcia, you want to tell us a little bit about how you see your role in the Deafblind Division, and definitely would love to hear about the mentoring program.
Yeah. So originally the mentoring program came out of a conversation, exactly what we're talking about. You know, growing up in the NFB, I never knew anybody that outwardly admitted that they had a hearing loss. I never knew. They might wear hearing aids, but they never called themselves deafblind, which is okay. I'm okay with that. But they never said, I'm hard of hearing. Excuse me, can you repeat yourself? It wasn't talked about. And so that's number one, what the division tries really hard to do is just get it out there that it's okay to talk about hearing loss. So there's that education piece. I know that I've spoken at several state conventions regarding deafblindness services, accommodations, and that type of thing. And so the mentoring program came out of that conversation that how can we pair up people that are brand new to the Federation so that they can then and get to know and learn about hearing loss and about things that we provide within the NFB that would help those folks that are new to hearing loss, or maybe they know they have a hearing loss, but aren't ready to take that step to getting hearing aids. So they're paired up with somebody, hopefully within their state. There hasn't been a huge amount of interest in this program as of yet, but hopefully after this podcast, there will be, because I think it has great potential. We also do a lot of building up in affiliates to talk to state presidents about, you know, again, deafblindness, accommodations. How can we help folks who have both a hearing and vision loss? Can we create affiliate divisions that would, you know, again, be that sort of middleman between the national office, the state affiliates, and the national division? So the mentoring program, like Alice said, we've had SSP workshops, providing SSPs during convention. A lot of our division members are becoming very active in writing Braille monitor articles. Because again, if we don't talk about it, folks are not going to learn. And so the vision is doing a lot. Obviously, a lot of that has to do with fundraising too. We do have our annual fundraisers like all other divisions and affiliates. We are a small division, but we work hard. And there was one other thing I was going to say, but I can't remember what that was right now. So maybe I'll remember at some point. So that's the division.
Thank you both for all of that information about the division. And it sounds like what you're saying is what we always say in the movement about blindness, which is if you're experiencing blindness or vision loss, reach out and be proactive about it. And the same applies to deaf blindness. And so I certainly hope our podcast will make more people aware. And even if they are just starting to experience hearing loss, they will reach out. So in the education space, because you both have done and the division has done a lot of educating, let's talk about some of the terms that we've talked about and the importance of having certain pieces in place. For example, captioning. We've learned a lot about captioning recently, and we're captioning this session right now so that we can all speak to each other seamlessly. And so talk about what the importance of captioning and the importance of and what an SSP is, because that was a term that I wasn't familiar with until recently, and a lot of our listeners may not be familiar with as well.
I'll go ahead. So captioning provides a written transcript. So for a podcast like this, then there is written text that goes along with the spoken oral words. So captioning can be used for television, for meetings, for workshops, for Zoom type of settings. And it provides, for some folks, they use both the oral auditory information as well as the transcript, because, you know, we're always taking in all of this information, and sometimes it's best that we can listen, read, and absorb that information. And so recently we've done a lot of work to see which captioning method works the best, and that is OneCap app. The OneCap app is a feature that can be accessed on the computer or through any Apple device and be accessed visually or through a Braille device or just listening to it with your jaws or voiceover. It provides, again, that written transcript. A person who may not necessarily be the fastest Braille reader can then have access to that entire meeting without having to read a million words a minute, because obviously we're speaking very quickly on this podcast, but you know, you have to be a very fast Braille reader to keep up with a normal conversation. So captioning is a very vital for individuals to have full and equal communication. And, you know, we've thought of some alternative ways, like providing, maybe getting a volunteer to do typing for a deafblind individual. And so there's always way, if there's a way, there's a will to provide access to a deafblind individual.
That's great. That's really useful information, particularly about the OneCap app, because that's something that we learned about. I know I learned about, because the Zoom captioning, for example, as good as Zoom is for many things, it isn't necessarily the best captioning solution, even though it has captioning capability. Particularly, I know my limited experience, I'm not deafblind, but trying it with a Braille display, it was a little frustrating. So I'm glad we have all worked together to find a solution that works better for everybody. It seems like that's what's happened.
Yes, that's correct. And so, you know, again, for, you know, originally captioning wasn't even designed for folks who were deafblind. It was designed for folks who might were deaf or hard of hearing. And so now it's something that the deafblind takes advantage of, just like anybody else can, whether they have a disability or not. The other term that we used is a support service provider, or SSP. In some parts of the United States, the term can be co-navigator or access provider. And so a support service provider is somebody who provides visual information about the environment, about what's going on, what coffee or what's on the menu, for example, who's in the room. As a deafblind person, I can't tell voices apart. And so I need somebody to tell me who is there. Provides communication assistance, and that can come in different forms. That could come in the form of a sign language or in an oral fashion. So also providing sighted guide. And now that support service provider is not dragging me around. That sure. person can be guiding me either verbally or by providing me with their elbow. So depending on, you know, a lot of situations, if I'm in a crowd, then I may take their elbow. If we're walking through the mall, I would prefer to have that SSP just walk next to me, just like, you know, anybody else. And I, you know, just follow along and we're talking, and that person is providing me information about, oh, this store has that music and they may have that sale. And there is a salesperson standing outside trying to give out samples. Would you like a sample? And so all kinds of things can be done with a support service provider. It's meant to help an individual who's deafblind maintain their independence. The support service provider is not overbearing, must be unbiased, and provide as much information or as little information as the deafblind person wants.
So it's all very much under your control. And of course, I imagine another purpose of it is to facilitate communication with other people, especially when there's things like sign language involved.
That is correct. And for example, for a long time, I used a microphone that would connect in with my hearing aids. And so the sound that was going into the microphone would directly put into my hearing aids. And so because I could physically go around and have people pass my microphone, or I could pass it for them, or whatever the case may be. But it was sometimes just easier for that support service provider to help people pass the mic and to facilitate that communication. Because as a deafblind person, again, I can't distinguish from voices, and no matter what, I'd never hear 100% of what a person is saying. My brain does a really good job of deciphering language, but you know, if a person has an accent, I may need them to speak slower. Or if they have a really high-pitched voice, I might need them to, again, speak slower. So there's a lot of factors that go into hearing language and understanding that language. So a support service provider can help absolutely with all types of communication.
You just said something, and I'm curious. So obviously you both are very articulate. You speak well, and you have a degree of hearing. What about those deaf blind individuals that can't hear? Can either of you speak to, like, I know tactile, there's tactile sign language that people who maybe don't have the best hearing?
Because I'm currently in between that spot. I have since convention lost another 30 decibels or so. So I actually sat in a booth with my hearing aids on with 112 decibels of sound and heard absolutely nothing. So wow. Passing past the profound. I mean, I have had a severe profound loss from the beginning, and the right ear is pretty much tanking, and it's well beyond the original profound level, which was 110, you know. So I know that for me, definitely, I'm on the speed track for cochlear implant on that ear, hopefully before Christmas. But for me right now, for instance, I'm reading the captions, but I'm also reading the captions on my Braille display, so that I'm doing three kinds of things simultaneously, as some people say. I can still tell that somebody's talking, sort of, but I too don't have the ability to distinguish a lot that way anymore. If I'm walking with even familiar people, if they get beyond arm's length, they're gone. I don't pick them up sound-wise. I might physically perceive that they're still present, but once they're past arm's length, they're invisible. And for the people that don't speak, I prepared for that as well because I use multiple kinds of apps to cover that. But the idea of not being verbal, here again, I have apps for that in certain situations where it's just not worth the bother of trying to talk. I get in lots of trouble when I go through the airport because of the fact that I do speak. They assume I hear. Gets me in tons and tons of trouble because I don't. When you add noise of any nature and sound that bounces off the walls and everything else and big rooms and all of that, or echoes. I remember the first convention I went to with Mr. Ruffalo when I went to Washington Seminar, I'd never encountered an echo before, nor had I ever heard it, but I was implanted then. So it was my first experience, and I thought an echo was something you had to talk over. And that's not the case, but he was very gracious and took me aside and explained. And, you know, but that's another thing that's equally different for all of us is we don't have the same hearing history that people perceive us to have. I mean, I speak very well, but my dad insisted, but I don't have the hearing history that goes necessarily with that language. I like books and I do lots of other things to keep practicing hearing, but it wasn't built in and it wasn't automatic. And some days I really have to think very hard on what I'm saying so that I say it correctly. And every once in a while, I will actually stutter, but not usually. I can do tactile sign. Not really great at it yet, but it's coming because that need is going to be there. Because when I'm at track, for instance, in bright light and sunlight, and I'm also hypersensitive to light generally, I don't have any vision.
Alice, can you explain to our listeners what tactile sign is?
It's basically, it's very similar to ASL, excepting it's hand over hand. While you are forming whatever letters you're doing or whatever sign symbol you're using, I'm actually physically touching it so that I can tell.
Thank you.
My favorite thing currently, because some days I also don't like the wind for the same reason, because I can hear it, but it becomes the only thing that I hear when I'm outside. If it's a windy day, I am more likely to take my stuff off, get to where I'm going and put it back on than I am to keep it on because I'm not getting anything except pain and disorientation.
Wow.
I use most of the same things that Marcia does. Deaf blindness is a continuum, just like with blindness, the idea that we're actually looking like we're looking at our phone and somebody determines that you can't be that blind then has nothing to do with anything. It doesn't with what you think we hear either. And I equally get in trouble because people perceive, because I know how to function in the world and have been doing it a while, that because how I behave, it means I hear what they say and it has nothing to do with each other.
With respect to that, and I really appreciate the education on the terminology, and it's also not just learning terms, but learning about the ways that both of you interact with the world as deafblind individuals, which is really helpful. What is it that you want people to know in terms of, I hope I'm putting this in a positive way, but you know, we talk about the courtesy rules of blindness and wanting to be treated with respect and not wanting certain things to be assumed. And you touched on this earlier when you were saying that you're perfectly capable of letting people know what your needs are and aren't. So, I mean, I would assume that part of it is just, you know, not making assumptions and not interacting with you necessarily in a different way unless you tell us to. But are there any things that you want people to know about acting respectfully and inclusively when interacting with individuals who are deafblind?
I can tell you the worst thing in the world is I'll tell you later or it's not important. when somebody is talking and we're asking what you say, those are like, can I kill you today? Because that's like, you dismissed every possible way that we have of figuring out what you just said. It says you're not only not willing to repeat it or rephrase it, it wasn't important enough that you were, you're kind of saying we don't count enough to have heard it in the first place. And it isn't that we're not trying to pay attention. My children have that problem periodically because they think it's a matter of paying attention, but it isn't. Because I can be as attuned as I want to and I'm trying visually. I have no depth perception. I have no peripheral vision. And like I said, you add light to a room and most of everything that I did see is gone. Best time for me is just before it rains, nice and overcast. I actually get something. But for communication,
if you'd like, Alice, I can go over the communication rules.
Yes, please. Thank you.
Okay. So generally, we have the communication rules that we abide by in the division and that anybody that interacts with us will soon, if not stated, will soon understand. So number one, when folks speak, they should always say their name when they're about to speak. So for example, hi, my name is Marcia, and that's, for example, I'm talking, and then, you know, when Alice talks, she'll say her name. Two, there's always should be a pause in between speakers. Because again, the way we understand and process language is probably a lot different than most hearing blind individuals do. And then also, if there are interpreters or CART or captioning that are taking place, we need time to have those communication methods catch up. And number three, so there's a pause. Number three, folks should not talk on top of each other. And in some cases, that means that there's an order, and that can be alphabetical or a prearranged order to how we speak, however people want to have that happen. And then, you know, taking pauses so that people have time to process language, to eliminate all of the background noise, to slow down, to give people time to say what they need to say. And then, you know, just to also be respectful. You know, again, like Alice was saying, I dislike when there are actual lunch meetings because I can't eat, listen, and do tactile sign language all at the same time because my hands are going to be busy. And so there's a lot of other things that I could say that are generally rules, but those are the main ones. Again, say your name, give pauses, be respectful of the person speaking, don't talk over. If you have something to say, then, you know, make sure that's said. A lot of times, you know, we think that when people say, you know, like, yeah, you know, that typical normal communication that makes that other people know that you're listening or that you agree. A lot of that is extraneous. And yeah, we're taught to do that and that's okay. But sometimes it can be very distracting.
Yeah. I can see that.
Yes.
Are those posted anywhere, Marcia? Because maybe we could put it in the show notes.
I can send it to you. Yes, sir.
We'll find a way to circulate it. I think that's a great idea. We probably should have gone over those before Chris and I started the podcast. Hopefully we haven't violated too many of those communication rules during this interview.
It's okay. We'll forgive you.
Okay. Thank you. But we really appreciate you sharing. Any final comments you want to make to our listeners before we close out?
We're mostly normal. This is Alice speaking. I like music. I sing. I also am quite artistic and I draw. Most of my pieces are fairly huge, but I only do charcoal. Although I did paint something once. Somebody in New York has it. I'm never getting it back. But, you know, the things that people would think we can't do, it's just a matter of how you plan it and how you figure it out.
Yeah.
And I mean, seriously plan it, but it can be done. I'm still learning. And because I live where I live, there's absolutely nobody to do sign language with. I do a lot with other people in other situations. Like when I do plan events with DB Cannon and Jay, I have a personal CF, which is a communication facilitator, and I go to their home because we know that we're safe, and they will communicate for me. For instance, like we have in a game, we'd have ASL interpreters, we'd have oral people speaking for those that can't speak, then we'd have the captions and all of those other things. And you're talking about playing bingo, mind you. So there's all of that stuff that goes with it. And that person would help me stay on point. And for instance, in the chat group, I'd be able to, we'd know ahead of time anyway, who everybody was going to be in the game. So we could talk to each other on breaks. It's a lot of fun. And if you plan it, we can have fun. And we have consistently for the last couple of years, except this year, had a chat time with the division because social, it's the only thing we can do. And we can't do that much of it under COVID conditions. So it takes some adventures to come up with other ways to do it.
Well, we're all looking forward to being able to be more social outside the time of COVID.
I would like to say that, yes, we are very much normal people. You know, just like the Federation says, it's respectable to be blind. It's absolutely respectable to be deafblind. And for anybody out there who is, you know, thinking, well, you know, my hearing is not as good as it used to be, you really should think about going and getting it tested because, you know, you never know when you're trying to cross the street and you may not hear that car or that truck. And I'm dead serious. There were many times where I had very close calls before I began using hearing aids. Or when you're in an emergency situation and somebody next to you is trying to say something and you cannot hear what they're saying. So being a person who's hard of hearing and who has a vision loss is okay. It's okay to wear hearing aids. It's okay to be deafblind. And if you're curious about the division, I encourage you to come and check us out. You know, we're not going to bite. We may have, you know, quirky little workshops or, you know, fun little communication activities, but it's again, all about education. And you don't have to be just deafblind to be in the division. You know, I love having conversations about deafblindness. You know, I think if there's one thing that I have learned about, you know, myself and about being deafblind is that, you know, like I'm meant to help those folks who are just like me. And I love the Federation. I've been a longtime NFB person and I always will be, but I want so much to be accepted into this organization. And we're making great strides at getting there, but we have a long way to go, just like, you know, the diversity and inclusion. And so again, we're normal and it is okay. It is respectable to be deafblind.
I appreciate that. Very well said. And, you know, we count our deafblind members as true members of our Federation family. So glad to have this opportunity to speak with you both. Hopefully this episode of the Nation's Blind podcast will help serve not only to educate the members of the NFB, but also society in general. So thank you guys for sharing time with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Anil, I know I learned a lot from that. That was super educational for me, and I hope it will be for our listeners as well.
Yeah. It's always interesting. I mean, I've known Alice and Marcia for quite some time now, but even in that discussion, I learned so much more about them. I just think it's so phenomenal, you know, and I hate to do this, you know, because we do this with blindness all the time when people say, oh, you're so inspirational or whatever, but I'll just be very candid. I was on a plane and I had my allergies really backed up really bad. And I got to this airport, and I may have shared this story before, but I was so congested, I could not hear. Everything was so muffled. And I'm just telling you, just traveling through the little gate at the airport to transfer to my plane was just such an ordeal. And I don't want to, you know, dismiss everything, because the thing that I always recognize, and luckily, you know, as a blind person, I know this, I hadn't received any training, right? As a deafblind person. And both of them both talked about how Helen Keller Center was very helpful in that. So I really think that it's endearing to recognize that, you know, despite whatever odds are out there, the human spirit is so intrepid that we can still, you know, live the life we want. And I just think that those two ladies are just exemplify that.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think it's so important for people to focus on that, because for you, that was an experience not unlike our sighted friends have when they try to wear a blindfold for a few minutes.
So, and I think that's what it's like to be blind, but it's like going blind. But once you get the training, yeah.
Yeah. So for Alice or Marcia, that experience would not have been nearly as intimidating as it was for you.
I wish one of them was there to help me.
Exactly.
It would have been wonderful.
I hate plane head. That's the worst.
I think another important part of what they talked about is I love hearing, you know, the accommodations that we need to put in place to make sure they can access the information. And so many people think of that as just a burden, right? Something additional. But I love pointing out the fact. So we talked about captioning. So that's a great way for deafblind to access information through the Braille keyboard. But I also recognize that my sighted friends, when we're hanging out at the bar, they benefit from captioning because they're watching television. They can't hear it, and they're reading the caption screen. So I really love pointing out to the fact that making accommodations and providing access to information to individuals that may have a different utility for that information doesn't negate the benefit that it may have to other people that it's not even intended for.
You know, it continues to be true that the more inclusive we are and the more accommodating we are of people with all kinds of differences, ultimately the better off we all are. The more information access we have, the more ways we have to interact with it. You know, we're going to post a transcript of this podcast. And that will be another way that people can access the information that's in it.
Does the division have a website?
The division does have a website, and it is nfbdeaf-blind.org.
Okay.
So
a hyphen between deaf and blind.
Right.
Okay, a dash rather. Okay. nfbdeaf-blind.org.
Right. Awesome. And we'll put that in the show notes as well. And we want to know what you think of this episode. And we also want to know what differences you have or that you want to hear more about or that, you know, we need to explore in the Federation so that we continue our efforts around diversity and inclusion, but also just learn to respect and appreciate our members who have things about them in addition to their blindness that they are adapting to and that we can learn about so that we're all better off for it.
So we love all the communication from our listeners. So a variety of different ways that you can reach out to us. And I'm going to take the easiest one I know so I can get it out of the way. Get on the phone. Call us at 410-659-9314, extension 2444, and let us know how you feel about our topics. If you have any recommendations of what we could add to the podcast, just reach out to us.
Absolutely. You can also do that by emailing podcast@nfb.org. And you can find us on Twitter @NFB_voice. And you can search for us on Facebook, the Book of Face, as my buddy Anil calls it. You just search for National Federation of the Blind, and you'll find our national organization and probably a lot of our affiliates and divisions, too. But you can directly contact the podcast through our national Facebook page.
Yeah, and always visit nfb.org for any other information. And until then, whether you're blind or deafblind, remember, you can live the life you want.
Blindness or deafblindness does not hold you back.